We celebrate birthdays on the last Saturday of the month. All are welcome.
Great job, great job. Okay. At this time, I would like to introduce our second speaker of the evening. A couple people came up to me and recommended that I ask our speaker to speak, and I found him on Facebook and messaged him, and he said yes, and I'm very grateful for that. Please welcome Russell.
Look at this crowd. I got shoes older than you guys. My name's Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. Is anybody here under the age of 33? I got sober before you were born. That's a scary thought, you know? I'm an alcoholic. I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981, and it's a privilege to be here, and it's a privilege to be asked to speak at an AA meeting. And, you know, I've been alive. I'm 65 years of age. My lovely wife is there. Where is she? There's Dickie, my lovely wife. I've been married for 33 years. You know, my sponsor said not to make any major decisions during my first year. I didn't think getting married was a major deal, but so we got 4 kids and 6 grandkids, and I'm self-supporting through my own contributions. So I'm just going to talk to you guys a little bit about my life and what's going on. And I asked my sponsor, I said, how do you become an old-timer in AA? He says, simple, don't drink and don't die. So I've been pretty much working on those two things. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on the drunkalog. You're going to have to trust me. You'd have to be crazy to get up here and do this stuff if you weren't an alcoholic. Of course, being an alcoholic doesn't have much to do with drinking, but I'm going to talk about some other stuff. But you're going to have to trust me. I reached the point in my life when I was 31 years old where I couldn't stop drinking. Anybody here ever get to the point where you can't stop drinking? Let me tell you how that works. You wake up in the morning and you say, I'm not going to drink today. But you say it like with sincerity, like with real feeling, like you will it. You say, I ain't going to drink today. And then by 5 o'clock, you're drunk. Then you wake up the next morning, you say, I'm not going to go to the bar today. And you mean it. You say, I'm not going to the bar. I'm not going to the bar today. By 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you're in the bar. And you wake up the next morning, you say, I'm not going to buy booze today. And by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you're scraping for dimes, nickels, and quarters so you can get up $2.89, go down to the Winn-Dixie, and buy a quart bottle of Carlos Rossi Chianti so you can sit by the record player. Back then, we had records. They were LP records. Some of you guys don't know what an LP is. You got to be alert to do LP records, you know what I mean? Let me explain to you how this works. Let me tell you how this works, because I'm also a self-pityaholic, you know? Anything that happened around me is worth feeling sorry for myself about, you know? And booze sort of helps that, but I don't need booze to feel sorry for myself. And I haven't found it necessary to feel sorry for myself in a while. But in any event, so what happens is, so I would take that bottle home with me, and you put on this record, the big black things. You ever see those things, you know? I know there's some oldsters in here, but... And what happens is they have like about six cuts on the record. It's not like CDs like you have now where you can press a button or, you know, program, you know. So what happens is as you're drinking, you know, you're drinking and you're listening to all those good Alky songs like Only the Lonely or Rainy Days and Mondays or, you know, Running on Empty, I'm Mr. Blue, you know, all that sort of good stuff, you know. You know, Pirate Looks at 40, you know. You know, you just get, you know, and what I would do is I would pick out, it would be my song for the night. A Pirate Looks at 40, you know, Jimmy Buffett, you know, and I would be Jimmy Buffett, you understand? I'd fluctuate between being Jimmy Buffett on stage with the girls all watching me, because, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you got a vivid imagination, you know? And, you know, and I fluctuate between that and my funeral, you know what I mean? And sure, you guys are laughing, you don't know what it's like, but, you know, if you want to work up a good, feel sorry for yourself, you just sit there and you drink, and what would happen is I'd be on the stage singing A Pirate Looks at 40 with all the girls looking at me. I go right from there to my funeral with all those bitches saying, why did we treat him like that? You know what I mean? He was such a nice guy, you know? And, you know, when your life turns into a bottle and you're doing that sort of shit, you know, things start falling out. You know, you don't really do so well with a lot of stuff, you know? And so I got to the point with my life where I couldn't stop drinking. You get to the point where you're drinking against your will. You understand what I'm saying? You're drinking against your will. And so finally you get to a point at 31 where you just get up and say, I can't stop. It ain't going to stop. You know, this is it. I'm going to die. My life is over. And that's the deal, and that's what happened to me. And I'm not going to go through the whole drunk log that happened, you know, the people I heard and the stuff. You know, I drank because I drank, like it says in the book, for the effect produced by alcohol. You know, it says in the book, it says we're restless, irritable, and discontent unless we can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks, and that's why I drank. I drank for to get to that spot, the effect. I never really realized, what happened to me is, I know I never realized this, you know, a lot of this stuff I'm telling you, I can't make myself 3 months sober, 6 months sober, 20 years sober, I'm 33 years sober, so I'm going to talk to you from my experience as a guy who's been 33 years sober. You know, my sponsor once said, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. You know, we all have a lot of opinions. I'm an alcoholic like you guys. I think I know everything, and I'm smarter, and I've put it all together intellectually. You know, my best thinking got me into this deal, got me all screwed up, and I hurt a lot of people. But there's nothing that substitutes for going through the bullshit. There's nothing that substitutes. You know, it's one thing to be sober. It's one thing to know the program. It's one thing to work the steps. That's all good stuff. There's nothing like working that shit over a period of 33 years through the bankruptcies, through the cancers, through the disappointments, through the bounce checks. Well, you guys are involved in it, aren't you? You're involved in the deal, right? You're involved in living life, dealing with reality, and trying to apply these steps as you're hating people, or as you're mad at people, or you're in a planet with a bunch of assholes. You know, you're involved in trying to do that and try to not drink or blow your brains out or blow somebody else's brains out and still keep a good attitude. And do so you know what that's all about. You're involved in that turning it over thing where, you know, something happens to you and you're going nuts and you're going crazy, you know, and you can't eat, you can't sleep. You know, you talk to this guy about it, you talk to, you know, the check bounces, or the guy disappoints you, or whatever happens, the boss looks at you funny, or you get fired, or you get, whatever it is, you're going nuts, you know what I mean? And if you were drinking, you'd say, screw this, you'd go to the bar and you'd go whack, and it would be over. It'd be over. You just go to the bar and say, that bitch, you know, some bitch, I say, you go whack, and you say, screw them. I don't give a shit what they think, you know? See, that's what alcoholics say. They say, I don't give a shit what they think about me. Yeah? You ever think that? You ever say that to yourself? I don't give a shit. You know why alcoholics say that, don't you? Because all they do is think about what other people think about them. You see, we lie to ourselves. You see, of course we're confused. We lie to ourselves. Some guy said, I think you got a split personality. I said, I wish I could get it down to two, you know? I mean, Jesus, you know, I mean, you know, no, we lie to ourselves. Listen, people who don't give a crap about what other people think about them, don't say, I don't give a shit what they think about me. They don't even think I don't give a shit. They say things like, you know, pass the ketchup, or I think I'll have a chocolate ice cream. They don't say that shit. The only people that say or think, I don't give a shit, I don't care what other people, I don't give a crap what they think about me, is people that wake up in the morning and go to sleep at night with people on their mind and worrying about what other people are thinking about them, with that other sort of paranoia we have that we think that people actually give a shit, you know, and they're actually thinking about us. But the problem is, when all you do is think about yourself, you know, it's like that movie Bitches, you know, what is it, Beaches, Bitches? You know, enough about me, let's talk about you, what do you think about me, you know, I mean, it's like that, you know, that's the nature of the disease. We're selfish, we're self-centered. That has nothing to do with alcohol. We're selfish, we're self-centered. That's what the body, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, we step on the toes of others to retaliate. Alcohol, because self will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we must get rid of the selfishness, we must, or it kills us, God makes that possible. You know, and you know, for me, booze made that possible. You know, that's why I drank. I drank because no woman, no suit of clothes, no amount of money, no car, no anything, no title worked just as well as just a few drinks. And so I drank. If you drank alcohol, I defy anybody to drink alcohol and have to do for them, do what it did for me and stop. You just ain't gonna do it. The reason I'm an alcoholic is not what alcohol did to me, it's because of what it did for me. It did something for me that I could not do for myself sober. And if alcohol still worked for me, I'd be drinking it today. But the sad part about my life is, or maybe the good part, is that alcohol doesn't work for me anymore, so I don't drink it. And of course, the sad part is that alcohol stopped working for me about 10 years before I realized it stopped working for me. And I hurt a lot of people. You know, I'd love to be able to say to you that, you know, I'm a nice guy and, you know, what do people say? I'm spiritual, not religious. No, I'm an asshole. No, listen, I've lived myself long enough. I don't bullshit myself. I'm not a nice guy. I'm an asshole. You scratch me, I want to know what the hell you're doing. It's all about me. I mean, I know what I am. I know what I am without God in my life. Anything that's decent to me that you like is not me. Trust me. If you knew me before that, anything that's decent to me is God's reflection of my life over 33 years of seeking him. That's what it's all about. I know exactly. I know. You know, I'd love to be able to say I hurt people because of alcohol made me do it. Alcohol made me not give back the money. Alcohol made me, you know, disappoint those people. Alcohol made me make all those excuses. Alcohol made me, you know, hurt that son of mine or do this or say those nasty words. I'd love to be able to say that, but you know something? Alcohol didn't do any. Most of the stuff I did to people, and I really hurt them, and most of the bad thoughts I had about people, I did it cold, stoned, sober. And I've hurt many of the people in my life the same way, with the same sort of anger after coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, after being sober, than before I came in. So I don't delude. The only thing alcohol did for me is allowed me to live with my sorry ass self without blowing my brains up before I was 18 years of age, because it was an escape. You know, that's the deal. You know, I mean, you know, the problem with alcohol, what I realized is I thought alcohol was the problem. Because to get to the point where you can't stop drinking, your life turns into a bottle, and it gets so bad that finally your life becomes totally unmanageable, and somehow, some way, in that dense fog of 31 years old thinking my life was over, I somehow connected the fact that my life was unmanageable and I was crazy and had something to do with not being able to stop drinking. Now, the truth is, I wasn't able to stop drinking a year before that, or a year before that, or a year before that, or when I got divorced, or when I did this, or when I did that, but I never connected the unmanageability of my life or the problems I had with drinking. Because what I understood is that the only thing that ever worked, how could I connect that with drinking when the only thing that ever gave me any pleasure in my life was drinking? You know, I could bullshit and say, well, I used to like to play golf, but I didn't like to play golf. You know, I really didn't like, what I like to do is play golf and drink. You know, if we were going to go play golf, I said, who's bringing the beer? He says, no, there's no alcohol. I ain't playing. You know, I used to think I liked to fish. I didn't like to fish. I like to fish and drink. I'd be out on the boat, and they'd say, come on, sit up here. You can catch fish. He says, no, I'm okay. Just give me another brew. I'm going to watch. You know, I'm a drinker. I did a lot of stuff as long as I could drink while doing it. If they ain't serving the drinks, I ain't coming. Because alcohol, my problem is not, now my alcohol, when your life becomes a bottle and the wheels start falling off and they're kicking you out of the house or they're dropping you out of school or they're filing for divorce or they're going to jail or all that stuff, and it turns into a bottle and you can't stop drinking and you're sitting by the record player every night, you know, drinking and feeling sorry for yourself, you finally, maybe, if you're lucky, you connect the problems. You say, your life is unmanageable, I can't stop drinking. And I tried to stop drinking, I couldn't stop drinking, and you connect that deal, and you think that the symptom of alcohol, you know, alcoholics drink. You know why alcoholics drink, don't you? Because they're alcoholic. They drink because they hate being sober. They can't stand sobriety. They can't see, if they liked sobriety, they wouldn't drink. If they felt good, but you see, how can you like sobriety when you just think you're a piece of shit? You know, my problem was, it didn't matter that I was a lawyer or a division chief in the state's attorney's office or one of the chief prosecutors, or, you know, I had a nice house or a nice wife, or, you know, any graduated department of law and mathematics, National Science Foundation fellow. It didn't matter all the accolades, all the bullshit. You know, bottom line is I knew I was a nothing. I was always going to be a nothing. I was never going to be anything but a nothing. I used to put something in my body. It used to turn me into an almost. When you're a nothing, almost is top of the world. See, how can you know? Dr. Carl Menninger wrote a book in the 1930s. It's called Man Against Himself. On the chapter on alcoholism, he said, men, alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. It has nothing to do with the circumstances. You give them $100 million, call them Justin Bieber, they're going to destroy themselves. You can call them Philip Seymour Hoffman. He can be the greatest talent in the world. He's going to destroy himself. Any alcoholic, doesn't matter, you can throw them all the romance, all the love, whatever it is, they're out to destroy themselves, because deep down inside they feel they aren't really justified to live on the fucking planet. Somehow, some way, they're in the shower lathering up, and all of a sudden they hear somebody say, you're a piece of shit, you don't deserve to live, and they turn around and they're the only ones in the shower. They're driving down the street and all of a sudden they hear, what an asshole you are, and they turn around to see you saying that, and it's only them. Because what alcoholics are is they're, you know, because that's the deal, because that's our reputation with us about ourselves. So you can stop the drinking, but how are you going to stop the thinking? How are you going to stop that twisting over and over in your mind that you're going to die and things are going to go bad for you? Because you don't deserve anything to happen to you, because you're a piece of shit. Now, of course, I'm not talking about you guys, because I can tell you guys are on an up. You're really, really on the, you're like the Mensa of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm talking about the people in my home group, you know what I mean? So to make a long story short, one night, it was Christmas Day, 1980, at 3 o'clock in the morning, some preacher was on TV. I'd been kicked out of a party, and he was giving his testimony, and I can't remember what he said, but he said something about accepting the Lord in your life, and, you know, it can change your life and transform you. And I'll tell you, I would do anything for relief, and I got on my knees, I gave my life to Jesus. I mean, it's not your story. It doesn't mean you have to be that. We're not alive with any second, but I'm just telling you the truth. I mean, you're entitled to your own opinion, not entitled to your facts. That's my facts. Now, it may seem like not a big deal to you, but for a Jewish kid from New York, it's a major thing. You know what I mean? Because when you're desperate, you'll do anything. When you're desperate, you'll do anything. You know what they say about alcoholics? We come into Alcoholics Anonymous unemployed. 3 months later, we're underpaid. You know, when you're desperate, you'll take any job. When you're desperate, you'll wake up and pick up the white chip. When you're desperate, you'll go to meetings. When you're desperate, you'll do shit that you would never do. When you're not desperate, you're sitting on your ass and you're all of a sudden saying, well, I don't know about that God thing. I don't know about this. I don't know about that. Because that ego starts popping and you start thinking about how good you are and how great you are. In between times, you think about what a piece of shit you are. And then you start that friction going again, which can only be solved by alcohol or, you know, snorting some lines or, you know, smoking something or popping some pill or something like that. So I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, I stopped the drinking. But here's the problem. I drank because I hated sobriety. Now, I didn't know I hated sobriety. You understand? I didn't know I had. See, because when you're an alcoholic, you're a whack job. I was a whack job. You don't realize you're a whack job because you think crazy. Because you're restless, you're irritable, you're discontent, you're in a state of dis-ease. You don't know you're in a state. You don't understand that you're living a life of it. You see, when you're an alcoholic, everything seems fucking difficult for you, to you. Life seems, things that you see, other, you're always comparing what's going on inside of you with what's happening with other people. And you may be making the money, and you may be looking good, and you may be having the suits and the cars and everything like that, but the bottom line is, as you're getting all the stuff and maybe even being successful, and you're looking at other people, you're working hard. You're in a state of constant worry. You're always worried about something. You're always concerned about something. There's always something. Your mind's going a million miles per hour. There's all sorts of shit going on. You're always pissed at this one or blaming that one. There's always a crisis. There's stuff. Life is just freaking difficult. It's just tough. And, you know, you say things when you're an alcoholic. You know, alcoholics say shit. You know, I can tell when somebody's an alcoholic, I don't have to smell their breath. I'll just watch it. They say, they don't know who they're screwing with. They can't do that to me. They don't know who they're screwing with. Why is this always happening to me? You know, they're in a traffic jam with 10,000 cars. They're saying, why me? You know what I mean? You know, there. I was a yes butter. I was an if-onlier, I was a you-don't-understander, I was a million of those things and a lot of other shit that we say, and of course, we don't know we're crazy. And you know, we don't know we're crazy because when you're crazy and you say all sorts of bad shit and you think bad shit about yourself and other people and that's your entire life and life is shit, I mean, everything is too good to be true. You hear anything good, you bat it down. Oh, that's too good to be true. Oh, that's bullshit. That's too good to be true. You know, if you're an alcoholic, it's, what are you, crazy? That's too good to be true. Because anything that's good is shit, and anything is bad is okay, because that's just the way you think it. You're an alcoholic, and you don't even know you think. You never hear an alcoholic say, well, that's, oh, man, that's bad. Well, bad must be true. Good can't be true. You know, and that's the way we are. We're negative. We're crappy. We blame people. We can't stand. And you know something? You know who I hang around? I hang around with people that think and talk just like I do. So if I ain't complaining, and if I'm not whining or crying or a thumb-sucking crybaby, I'm sitting next to Ralph, and he's the thumb-sucking crybaby. The gals I hang with are mirror images of me, even though I sit around thinking I'm unique. It's the funny thing. I'm thinking nobody understands me, of course, except the guys in the bar. And the bottom line is we're all like twins. That's why AA works. The reason AA works, that's all you have to do is give a good AA talk. Just be sincere. Just tell what's, hey, once you learn how to fake that, you got it made. But I mean, just be sincere. Just tell what's on your mind. Just tell the truth, which is impossible for us to do because we don't even know the truth. But just tell the truth, and some son of a bitch is going to come up to you and say, you were talking about me. I know you were talking, you were looking at me. You say, you know, I mean, that's because the truth is we're all exactly the same. We may, you know, sort of look different. Some are fat, some are skinny, some are good looking, some are ugly. Well, it doesn't matter. But the point is, it's the same thoughts, it's the same bullshit. And the bottom line is, and that's why I drank. I drank to get relief from that crap, because that's the only thing that works. You're telling me that's the problem? That's the only thing that worked in my life. Now, there's other things that works. The sex works, you know. The romance works, you know. The cars work. But nothing works as good and as fast as booze or dope or whatever the heck you're using. And so that's why I drank it. Now, here's the problem. Now, I'm 31 years old. I come into, you know, I get a sponsor. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I stopped drinking. You get it? I stopped drinking. Great deal of elation. I'm happy as a clam. You know what I mean? All of a sudden, I got money on my desk. I stopped drinking. But here's the problem. Now I've stopped drinking. Now, you understand what the problem is now? You get it? I've stopped drinking. You know where I'm at? I'm sober. You know what that means? I'm screwed. Yeah. So if you've been around here for more than 3 or 4 weeks, now, how long do you think, I wonder how long, we ought to take a poll in Alcoholics Anonymous. I sponsored a guy named Tommy H. He's still around, he's got like 30 years now. And Tommy got sober, and I had about 3 years, and I sponsored him. And Tommy was a prosecutor just like me, a division chief, and he reached the point, I came a day sooner. And Tommy called me up one day, he was supposed to be in court, he couldn't make it because he had a shotgun in his mouth. And, you know, sometimes that's where it'll take you to, and he was calling. I said, Tommy, I can't talk. I can't understand you. Take the damn shotgun out of your mouth. And he started talking about how he couldn't stop drinking, how he couldn't stop doing coke, you know, and he needed to be in court and blah, blah, blah. So I called up the chief judge, got him out of that thing, and I ran down to see him. And Tommy, who was a star athlete, you know, like, you know, a real jock in the whole bit, and a division, one of the major guy in the state attorney's office, he was sleeping on the floor of a probation office we knew. He had hair down to here. Okay, he was in the same shirt and same pants for the last 3 weeks, and he had a beard, a long beard. And I took Tommy and I put him in my car and I drove him to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I plunked him in the room and he took to this thing like a duck takes the water. Man, he was like home, which is sort of like the way I took it. He was home, you know? The next day, Tommy's hair was cut, you know what I mean? He looked like he just got out of the Marines. The beard was shaved. He had new pants, a new shirt. He looked like the old Tommy, you know what I mean? He was like in the saddle, raring to go, and he was in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my name is Tommy, and I'm an alcoholic, and he was saved. You with me? And so he did great. I haven't had a drink since then. One month later, he's doing great. He's riding cloud nine. One month later, I get a call from Tommy. He's in Tampa. He's driving. And he says to me, he says, Russell, he says, and he's nervous. He's got that voice, you know, that something's wrong. What is it, Tom? He says, I'm really worried. He says, listen, he says, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I said, what do you mean? I mean, you know, guys, you know, he's like a stone alcoholic. You know, he finally got into AA. It's working. He says, I don't think he was worried. He thought he might have to leave AA. He says, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I said, what do you mean? He says, I don't know, Russ. He says, I think. I says, I think I might be just crazy. You see, he had been sober for a month. You know what I mean? So, you know, the you know, what he didn't realize is that just because you're not drinking doesn't mean the disease stops. You know, the alcoholism goes on. You know, and he had started thinking again. It started. Anybody ever feel depressed in here? Well, you guys don't feel depressed. I mean, very depressed. Anybody ever been very? You ever notice that? Prior to being very depressed, there's like a whole bunch of like thinking going on. You ever notice that? You know, isn't it true? Preceding the crappy feeling, you ever feel crappy about shit? You ever realize that preceding the crappy feeling? Isn't it true that you got this? You got all this thinking shit going on. By the way, alcoholics do worship something. You know what they worship? They worship their feelings. That's all they think about is their feelings. That's the only thing that's important. That's all they want to talk about. It means is their feelings. That's all they care about is their feelings. Yeah, I killed those 5 people, but, you know, they pissed me off, and they shouldn't have done that. You know, it's all about feelings. You know, it's all about coming home one day and your wife saying something like, and you're sober, and your wife saying something like, honey, we're out of milk. We're out of milk. Why don't you just fucking say, would you get me something? Why are we playing these damn frickin' games? You know, I'm out of milk. Why don't you get the frickin' milk sometime? Why am I always getting the milk? You know what I mean? We're out of milk. You can't say, you know, would you go get the milk? You don't have the balls to say you'll get the milk? Why didn't you get the milk? I work all freaking day. I come home for you to tell me we're out of milk. I know what we're out of milk, and maybe I get the milk, and maybe I don't get the milk. Or maybe I get the milk, and I can't believe that I had to go out and get the milk, and I throw the milk in the refrigerator. We have a fight. The cops come. I tell them about the fucking milk, you know what I mean? And she said about the milk, you know, and... You know, because she's, because don't you want, you don't understand, you know? You don't say, it's like, I have feelings, you know what I mean? I'm a sensitive guy, and you know. So alcoholics have these feelings problems, and we think our feelings are more important than anything else, you know. And all my son wanted was some milk, you know, in the morning, you know. He didn't realize he was dealing with an asshole, but here's the deal. So here's the problem. The problem is this. See, Tommy, you remember Tommy? Tommy had started experiencing the disease of alcoholism, which, by the way, you'll probably experience until the day you die, to one form or another. And he started thinking he was crazy, which he was, which you are, you know what I mean? And so what I said to Tommy, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I said, I think I'm crazy. And I said, Tommy, listen. He says, what? He says, listen. He says, what? He says, you can be both. He said, really? I said, absolutely. He said, oh, thank God. I thought I had to leave AA. And I said, no, you can be both. So I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I got myself a sponsor. I'm going to tell you, I just got to tell you, you know, listen, when you got, I've been around for 33 years. Can you imagine how many stories I got? I mean, 33 years of sponsoring people, of doing this stuff. You know, what I want to do is I want to sit here for 5 hours and tell you all the stories, you know, but I got to pick two or three stories out or something like that, and we're going to be done in about early sobriety, probably. And I really want to tell you a little bit about how good it can get. I hope I have some time to tell you about how good it can get. Because it can get pretty good. You know, they say in the book, it says we've experienced much of heaven and we've been rocked in the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. It said it's remarkable things. If you sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happen. It says, see to it your relationship with him is right. Great events will come to pass to you and countless others. I know you guys think this is a program of a bunch of guys sitting around with 15 years saying, I'm hanging in there one day at a time. I know that's what you think. One day, hanging in there, haven't had a drink today. You know, I know you think it's a bunch of thumb-sucking crybabies of 10 years. You know, I know you think that's what this is about. But there are some people that break free of the gravitational pull of that bullshit. And they actually have a happy, joyous life. And they experience that joy of living. It's a real thing. There's concrete underneath those lily pads. So I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was always terribly under-sponsored by abusive sponsors. Let me tell you something. And I'm trying to be humble here. I was going to give my speech on humility here, my world famous speech, but I never do it really with a group this small. But I did it up at WikiPaw, but I mean, I'm not going to do it with this group. But in any event, I came to AA and I looked around for Jesus or, you know, Albert Einstein. They weren't available, so I got a used car salesman from Chicago who had like about 20 years and didn't graduate the sixth grade, which was, but you know, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you're vulnerable. I had like two neurons working, they were waving goodbye to each other, you know, I mean, I wasn't doing too good. It was a bad deal. You know, I was vulnerable. What did I know? You're stupid in AA. You don't know. You'll ask a fucking turtle to sponsor you. You don't know. Anybody's got more sobriety than you do. I mean, you know. So I came in today and I got sponsored by this guy, you know, this guy, Bob Sullivan. And he said to me, he says, there's three things I want you. He says, I want you to read the 24-hour book every day. He says, I want you to ask God's help to stay sober. I remember him asking me whether I believed in God. He went right to ask God's help every day. And he says, I want you to join a home group. Because this guy was talking about the home group up here. And he says, we'll join a home group. So I said to him, he says, well, what group do you belong to? He says, no, you wouldn't like that group. So he didn't want me joining his home group. I ended up doing it. But in any event, so I go to the South Dade room. And I walk in, like, I got like about 3 days or whatever it is, 5 days, whatever the hell I got. I walk into the back of the room and I sit in the back. You know, I sit where, you know, newcomers sit. If I got any more back, I would have blended into the wall. You know what I mean? And I wait for them to recognize me as the emperor of AA, you know, and the brilliant and, you know, the superstar. And, you know, they're all sitting in their little cliques, their little groups. You know how AA guys are. You know, they're all sitting there talking in their little tables and everything like that. And And, you know, they start the meeting, and I'm waiting in the, they didn't have mics up, but it's going around the room, and the guy's picking people and everything, and I'm waiting for them to pick me, because obviously I'm brilliant, I have a lot of stuff to say, I've got feelings too, and, you know, I got to talk, and I'm a new guy, and they don't pick me. And, you know, as it's going around, it becomes apparent to me that they're picking all their friends and everybody they know and everything. You know, I start with the feeling shit and the thinking shit and, you know, what a bunch of, you know, love and tolerance is not cold. Fuck, you had bullshit. Fucking bullshit. The whole thing is bullshit. This whole deal is bullshit with a bullshit, these are bullshit people. You know what I mean? So I walked up to my sponsor. You see, this is alcoholic thing. You know what that is? That's, you know what that is, by the way? That's alcoholism. See, I don't know what's alcoholism because that's just the way I think. That's the way I think naturally. It's like being right-handed. Our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. Our alcoholic life, the way we think, the way we act, the way we perceive, is normal to us. It's normal. That's the way I react. That's why all my friends reacted. You know, we get a new perspective. That's what it says in 12, by 1,000 forms of humiliation, the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. That's how we get in here, by being crushed. That's how we change in all respects, by being crushed. So I go up to my sponsor, who actually was sane at the time, because he was sober, and I explained to him. He says, so how was the meeting? He says, it was terrible. It was horrible, because to me it was terrible. He says, these people are a bunch of selfish idiots. I went in there, you know, they have their little cliques, they only care about themselves, they didn't go up to me, they didn't ask me about myself, they didn't say anything, they didn't recognize me as a newcomer, they're a bunch of idiots. And he says, this is what I want you to do. You ready for it? Now you see, if he was one of my drinking buddies, we could have sat down and had a conversation, because he would have said, you know, those guys are assholes. You know what I mean? We could have gotten a little agreement going there. And then I could have told you what they were assholes. And I could have spread it around the groups about what assholes they are. And I could have kept on talking to people. And then I could think in my mind what assholes they are and how crazy they are. And I could talk about how crazy and bullshit AA is and how AA doesn't work. And I could keep that going maybe for, I don't know, 10 or 15 years. And maybe I can keep on drinking, you know what I mean? And say, I tried AA and it doesn't work. And, you know, and then I wouldn't be here talking to you. I could do that. Because if you're an alcoholic, you could do that kind of crap, right? But unfortunately, I had this stupid sponsor who was a used car salesman, didn't know shit, you know. And I walked up to him and I told him this. And he says, this is what I want you to do. I said, what? He says, I want you to go back to that group. And I want you to introduce yourself to them. And I want you to join one of those cliques. I said, wait a second, you want me to? He says, I want you. And, you know, unfortunately, I was still in that vulnerable stage. I hadn't gotten to that defiant stage where I said, screw you. I was still at that scared thing. I didn't want to drink. Let me tell you something. When you don't want to drink and you're desperate, it can cover a whole lot of bullshit. Because if you're in here and you're crazy, and if you're in here, by the way, you're crazy. If you're in here, I'm telling you, listen, if that pisses you, hey, by the way, if anything I said pisses you off, just remember, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the problem, there's something wrong with you. Or as one of my sponsors used to say, when you throw a rock into a pack of dogs, the one that yells the loudest is the one that gets hit. So the bottom line, so he says to me, go into this deal, you know. So when you're scared of drinking, and I hadn't had a drink for about, you know, 3 weeks or something like that, and I somehow connected not drinking to listening to him and stuff like that, you do shit, you know, you just do it. So I went back to the group. I walked up to one of the cliques. I sat down. Instead of sitting in the back, I said, my name's Russell. I'm brand new. They said, hey, how you doing? They sat down. They started talking. He says, let me get you some coffee. They got me some coffee. They said, hey, why don't you do the meeting? They said, really? He says, yeah, you do the meeting. You read the thing. So they had me read the thing. I said a few things. They got him up. He said, hey, keep coming back. You know what I mean? And they were really nice to me. And I left. And my sponsor said, so how was that meeting? He says, that's like the greatest fucking meeting in the world. These guys are great, you know? Great meeting. Must have been a whole new crew, you know what I mean? My sponsor, they treated me bad. You know, my sponsor comes to my office one day. I've got in my office, I've got this wall of just diplomas and certificates showing I've been educated far beyond my capacity to understand anything. You know, I mean, brilliant, you know? And, you know, it's for the clients, so I can get the money, you know? And it's just, so I said, Bob, I said, this is the way I was treated. You see, you guys have nice sponsors. He says, I said, Bob, I said, these are my degrees. And he says, you know, Russ, rectal thermometers have degrees. You know what they do with those? I'm not making this shit up. This is the way they treated me. You know, I used to say to him, I can't believe that son of a bitch bounced the check on me. He bounced the check on me. He bounced the check and this is going to happen. And then I'd say, Russ, let me ask some. How would you feel if it didn't bother you? I said, what do you mean? He says, how would you feel if it didn't bother you? He said, what do you mean? How would I feel if it didn't bother me? He says, how would you feel if it didn't bother you? I said, what are you talking about? He said, how would you feel if it didn't bother you? What do you mean, if it didn't bother me? Yeah, if it didn't bother you. You mean if it didn't bother me that he bounced a check on me? Yeah, if it didn't bother you at all that he bounced a check on you, how would you feel? I said, well, if it didn't bother me, I'd feel fine. He said, there you go. I don't understand that. I'd start talking about it. He says, I'm going to lose my job. They're going to kick me out. And he'd say, well, how are you doing right now? He says, what do you mean? He says, well, how are you doing right now? I said, what do you mean right now? He says, well, how are you doing right now? He says, what do you mean right now? Here, sitting here talking to you in the Sunset Room? He says, yeah, right now, sitting here in the Sunset Room talking to me, how are you doing? I said, well, right now, I'm okay. He says, there you go. And he'd walk away. You know, how do you deal with idiots like that? In the bar, that's good for like 5 hours and a couple of bottles of scotch, you know what I mean? He wouldn't have a conversation with me. One day he says to me, I'm sitting there, you know, when you're an alcoholic, you don't like silence. You don't like sitting at a table with people where there's no talking. Of course, these days, that's all changed because we all got the thing going, you know? But the Facebook, you know, we're all talking all the time, you know? We're all chattering all the time to save ourselves from thinking, because if you got to sit there without the Facebook, without the thing, you got to think. And what do you think about? You think about bad thoughts about yourself and other people. So you got to have the radio on and TV on because you're a fucking Looney Tune, because you can't sit in silence, you know? But I'm not talking about you guys, so don't get upset. I'm talking. This has nothing to do with you, as a matter of fact. I don't even know why you're listening. But here's the deal. So I would sit there and... how many hours do I have here? Yeah, okay. So anyway, I get, you know, alcoholics, they get nervous. He might be going over 5 minutes or something. Just relax, you know. But in any event, so here's the deal. You know, I'm 65. I'm not going to be around for a long time. You're going to be, you know, 5 years from now, you're going to say, I wish I had listened to that guy some more. So, you know, now he's dead and, you know. So in any event, I'm sitting at the table with three other guys. This is a true story. I'm sitting at the table with three other guys. I got about a month. Tell you two stories and then I'm done. Okay, the first story, I got about a month, and this story and the Al Kennedy story. I got about a month, and I'm at the table with two other guys, and I don't know about you, how many guys were bar drinkers? Anybody here drinking bars? Okay, so when you're drinking in bars, this is what you do, and this is my main hobby, okay? My hobby, truthfully, as an alcoholic, is I like to talk bad shit about other people behind their back, okay? Now, I didn't realize that until I was sober, but that's what alcoholics do. You talk bad shit about other people behind their back to people. You get them to agree, and then you listen to how they're going to talk bad shit about other people behind their back, and you agree with them. They agree with you, and you agree with them, and then you're like BFFs or whatever the hell that thing is, you know? And that's the deal. So that's what I do. That's my natural. I don't even know that's wrong. That's just the way I am. It has, you know, I'm a nice guy. I'm spiritual, not religious, whatever that shit is. You know, I'm just talking bad shit about. And because if you're an alcoholic, you're blessed with the ability to recognize assholes. Isn't that true? I mean, isn't that true? You can rest. You know, I'm sitting in the bar, you know, on the other side of the bar, you know, 100 yards away, I see some guy walk in with a good looking blonde. I turned to my friend, I said, look at that asshole. You know what I mean? You know him. You know, right? You know it. That's why, you know. So you know. So that's the deal. So I'm sitting there with these three guys. I'm sober. I'm not drinking. You know? I apparently still have this alcoholism thing, whatever that deal is. I don't know I have it because I'm not drinking, because it's all about not drinking, right? I mean, you can kill 15 babies and rape a pig, but, you know, as long as you're not drinking, you know, come up and get your 15-year medallion. Who gives a shit, you know? But the bottom line is, you know, well, some of us think otherwise, but some of us think differently. But in any event, so I'm sitting there, and I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden there's silence. So I say, because I can't stand the silence, I say, the most innocent thing in the world, I said, what about that guy, Bob? You know what I mean? You know, when he said, you know, and I start talking about this guy, and my sponsor, the used car salesman, the guy didn't even graduate the sixth grade, says to me this in front of these other guys. He says, Russell, he says, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, we don't talk about other people behind their back in AA. He says, so unless you have something good to say about somebody, why don't you just shut up? He didn't say, would you mind being quiet or take my, he said in front of, he humiliated me. You know what I mean? I don't know about you, but like it was like Hiroshima going off in my head. You know, I used to tell my sponsor, I'd say, I'm sensitive. He says, no, Russ, great artists are sensitive. You're just touchy. You know, I mean, I just, you know, and I want to kill him, kill his wife, rape his dog. You know, yeah. Who the hell is he? I'm gonna, But you see, the bottom, you know, love and tolerance is our code. Where is that shit? You know, why isn't he doing that? And how could he say that to me and make me feel good? Now they're all thinking bad thoughts about me. But I don't give a shit what they think about me anyway. You know what I mean? I'm lying to myself again about what, you know, it's all sorts. It's very, very confusing if you're an alcoholic. So, you know. And so what happens is, so he says that to him. But the thing, here's what happened. Here's the deal. I want you to watch this. This is very important. But what happened was, if you're an alcoholic and you spend your whole life worrying about what other people think about you and whoring yourself out and whoring every value you have so that you can fit in. In other words, if you're with racists, you talk like a racist. If you're at a place where they're drinking martinis, you drink martinis. If you're in a country and western bar, you drink beer. If you're in Key West, you drink margaritas. You never get them mixed up. You're basically a whore. You want people to accept you. That's why you drink. I used to think I was a people person. He says, if you're a people person, why are you always drinking when you're around people? Because you were so scared that they would judge you and they wouldn't let you in. I used to be worried about going to the group. I'd have a couple of drinks. I'd say I felt like I owned the group. You know what I mean? That's what booze did for me. And so the bottom line is he's telling me, so. But that same thing that almost killed me out there in the street, trying to whore myself out and blend in, and not, because if you're an alcoholic, you're a please don't reject me a holic, please love me a holic, why won't they, what will they think about me a holic? You got all them holic things going on. So, but that same thing that used to kill me out in the street, like to save me in AA, because I wanted my sponsor's respect. So as much as I got mad and he hurt my feelings and everything, I didn't want to disappoint him, I wanted his respect. So what I did was I started watching what I said. You know, how's that for a freaking thought? I start watching what was coming out of my mouth. And so certainly when I was with my sponsor, and even when I wasn't with him, I stopped, I'd want to, and the way you have to, and this is the way it works, if you're going to start talking shit about other people, like, you know, I say, what about that Spencer? You know, and you're going to start thinking about Spencer, and then all of a sudden you're going to say it, and you can't say, you know, that Spencer's such an idiot, you know what I mean? So what happens is it starts coming down what an idiot says. You know, that Spencer guy says, yeah, you know, he's not a bad guy, you know? I mean, you watch what you say, you know? And so what happened is I started watching what I was saying about other people. So I had to watch what I was thinking about other people. And since I'm a talker and I like to talk, and he said the only thing I can say in AA is talk about good things about other people, I had to think of good shit to say about other people. I had to think about positive shit. So I started talking positive. As a matter of fact, I became like a you know, Nazi. You know what I mean? I'd hear other people talk. He said, hey, this is AA. We don't talk crap about other people. I go up. But here's the crazy thing. Now, here's the crazy thing. 2 weeks later, when I started doing this thing with almost not even knowing it, I started feeling better about myself. You see, if my sponsor told me, Russ, if you can watch what you say and watch what comes out of your stupid asshole mouth and start thinking good things about other people, you might start thinking that you're not such a bad piece of shit. You know, maybe you'll start thinking good things about yourself. Maybe the reason why you condemn yourself is because you condemn everybody else. You know, by the standards you judge other people, that's the way you're judging yourself. You know, if he had told me that, I said, well, you're full of shit. You know what I mean? But he didn't tell me that because I'm an alcoholic. Because with alcoholics, that doesn't work because we're defined. You know what he said? He said, why don't you just shut up? Because that works without, obnoxious works with alcoholics. And the last story I'm going to tell you is this, and this is the last one, and then we're out of here, you know? So I go to a meeting. I'm 3 or 4 months sober. And these are all early sobriety stories, you know, 3 months. I go to a meeting 3 months sober. And there's this guy speaking. He had about the same amount of time as I have now. A guy named Al Kennedy. Never saw him before. Never saw him since. And you know, we have a chapter in our book called Vision for You. You know, a vision. I don't know what your vision is for you. I don't know what your vision is. But you know, like the Bible says, as iron sharpens iron, man sharpens man. You know, the person you'll be in the next 5 years will depend upon the people you associate with and the books you read. And trust me, the books you read will be dependent upon who you associate with. Who you associate with has a great deal to do with who you become. Okay, that's, you know, it says if you want what we have and you're willing to, some people want what we have, some people just want what they had. But if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length, and any length sometimes means hanging out with the people that have what you want. And he brought me into this this room called the Keynote Group. And I'm sitting there, I'm watching this guy talk. He had about 33 years, you know, and I'm watching this guy, and he's talking, you know, he's talking to me like he was like in his living room, you know. It's like he wasn't sitting there, he wasn't self-conscious, you know. He was obviously, he was, he was, um, he had an air of being comfortable in his own skin, you know what I mean? Which I never was, you know? I never was comfortable in my own skin. I mean, like, I was always searching, you know, how can I really not give a shit about what other people, why am I so scared of people? Why am I so worried about, this guy looked like he had that thing locked, like he had figured out that deal, you know what I mean? And he wasn't arrogant, but he wasn't weak, you know? He was gentle, he was kind, he was trying to help people. But he wasn't like weak, and he was confident, but he wasn't and strong, but he wasn't arrogant. You know, he was just he was what I would call my envision of the man I would like to be. He was. I said, man, if I could, I even thought to myself, you know, you think to yourself almost subconsciously, if I could hang out with that guy, I wish I could hang out with that guy. That was like what my sponsors were. My sponsors were guys that whenever I was with my sponsors. You know, and I joke about them, you know, that, you know, I talk about my degrees, and they were all like post office guys. When, you know, the truth of the matter is, whenever I was with my sponsors, I felt safe. No matter what was going on in my life, if I was with my sponsor, I thought I was like untouchable as long as I was sitting next to my sponsor. You know what I mean? Like, this guy had all the answers. It was like Buddha, you know, and everything my sponsor said was like brilliant, except when he was humiliating me, you know? And even then he was brilliant, you know? This guy was just like one of those guys, one of those miners, one of those guys that I said, man, if I could only hang with this guy. So he finishes his talk, like, I'm going to finish here, and he walks out the room with the other clap, and he walks out the room. So I turned to my sponsor. Now, listen, I want you to imagine this if you can. This happened to me. I'm not making this shit up. This is something like I put together, you know, for your benefit. This actually happened to me. I was there when it happened. I saw it happen. You know, and I've shared it all over the United States. And he walks out of the room, and I guess this meeting was for me. Now, here's the interesting thing. I don't know whether anybody else knew this. I don't know. There were maybe as many people in the room as there are right now, and I may have been the only guy who knew what I'm telling you right now. You know what I mean? Maybe there were others. I'm the only one who knew the effect it had on me. I thought AA was about not drinking. How many people think AA is about not drinking? Well, of course it's about not drinking, but you know, that's what I thought. I thought it was about not drinking, only about not drinking. That's why they give out the chips. Don't drink unless your ass falls off. You know, it's all about not drinking. So this guy finishes, and he walks out of the room, and my sponsor, and I turned to my sponsor, I said, he was great. And my sponsor says this. He says, you know, he's dying. And I turned to my sponsor almost like I didn't hear him, because I really didn't hear him. I mean, I heard him, but like I didn't understand him. And I said, no, I'm talking about the guy who just did the meeting. And he said, because I thought he was talking about something. I don't know what he was talking about. He says, yeah, he's dying. I said, no, the guy, Al Kennedy, the guy who just did the meeting, he says he's dying of cancer. He's got 3 months to live. Imagine that. Imagine if you're in a room and you hear somebody talk. They don't even mention anything about it. They're just loving on people. They're talking to people. You know, you guys ever been to discussion meetings in AA? You know, all a bunch of thumb-sucking crybabies. I'm not putting it down. We all have to go through that. My mother, my boss, I can't believe what happened today with my car, you know. He says he's dying. He's got 3 months to live. And 3 months later, Al Kennedy was dead. And I said to him, I said, he didn't say anything about it. He says, I know. He said, he didn't even mention it. He didn't even look at it. He says, no, he was just trying to help people. He says, I know. And, you know, right then, somewhere deep down inside, my conception of what sobriety was and what true sobriety was and what it meant to be a man and what this program could give you and the power of God and what was available, my conception went from the not drinking thing all the way up to the Al Kennedy thing. I looked at Al Kennedy. I said, if you want what we have and you will, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, that means there's a step before. It says then you're ready to take certain steps. You're not even ready until you develop a we. You're not even ready. It says if you want what we have and are ready to go to any length to get it, and willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And so you got to develop a we. And Al Kennedy, my sponsor, was part of my we. Al Kennedy went right into my we. And I've been adding Al Kennedys and people like that into my we. And that was the thing. I never want to settle for the not drinking thing. Although I do believe you can have all sorts of shit happening to you if you don't drink. You're a success, you know what I mean? But the point is, I've always understood that, as the sixth step says, there's the men in here and they're the boys. And the men are very, very few, and the boys, a lot of them. I've always understood the difference between physical sobriety and real mental and emotional sobriety in here and the difference. You know, and even though the newcomer is the most important guy in here, and I believe that, the old timer is pretty important too. The old timer is pretty important too. God forbid if the only people that showed up were guys with less than a year. A lot of fist fights in here, right? I'll tell you, back then in the old days, you know, and there's these good groups, I'm not putting down any now, where you used to walk into a group and there'd be seven or eight people with, you know, 20 years, 25 years, you know, 30, you know, you had people that, you know, old timers, man, you listen to these guys. They ran these groups, man. It was really something. It was a different deal. So God bless you. I've gone a little bit over. Thank you very much.
Let's have one more round of applause for our speakers this evening. For the benefit of the newcomer, if you have a sponsor, please raise your hand. Now, please keep your hand raised if you have worked the 12 steps and are willing to be a sponsor. If you do not have a sponsor, please speak to one of these people after the meeting. The 12th tradition reads, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. For those who care, we'll close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer.